You've tuned in to the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Do you realize what you've done?
With Rich Liebig.
The real gangster plays his cards right.
And Michael Costanzo.
What was that that you just read?
Let us be the crispy noodle in your vegetarian salad of life and boring news.
Good times, noodle salad.
The point is, you now have the ability to be happy.
And now, here's Rich and Mike on the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
All right, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Crispy Compact Communique, the shortened version of the regular show that you know, that you love, that you know, the Crispy Noodle Podcast. We give you some quick tidbits in sports, entertainment, odd news, and whatever else is happening with this crazy world that we live in. Thank you for joining us on another episode. I am Rich Liebig.
I'm Michael Costanzo.
And thankfully, thanks to the power of the internet, we can still put together somewhat of a show. It's not our usual, the Crispy Noodle Podcast, but we can still whip something together so you have fresh content every week. Thank you for joining us on this episode. We have some news to get to in the world of sports, entertainment, and odd news. Before we get to all of those, Mike, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good, hanging in there. Man, I got nothing new to report on my end. Same old, same old.
That's staying at home. Yeah, that's kind of what happens.
I know, it's terrible. It's just the... I feel like I'm such a bum. I'm like, yeah, nothing's happening.
Hey, you bum.
You bum. You know what I did? I've been watching. I've been catching up on some TV and movies. I recently
watched, a bum would do.
Exactly. Like the good bum that I am. I watched the movie Jojo Rabbit. Or rewatched it technically. I'd seen it already. Have you seen that one yet?
No, I didn't see it, but I heard about it.
It's really good. It's about this 10-year-old kid in Nazi Germany who joins the Hitler Youth Group. And he's like all gung-ho, very much like, yeah, I'm going to be a Nazi. I'm going to fight in the war. We're going to win. Germany's the best. What he doesn't realize, and then he soon comes to learn, is that his mom is hiding a teenage Jewish girl in their, I guess, upstairs. And so it's really, you know, a whole story about how he learns that Jewish people are not, you know, terrible evil demon creatures that the Nazis make them out to be. And it's about this young boy and this teenage girl's sort of budding friendship in the middle of this war. It's very, very funny because the boy is accompanied by his imaginary friend Hitler. So it's Hitler, but he talks and acts like a 10-year-old would imagine somebody talking and acting.
Well, that's the director too, isn't it?
Yes, Taiki Waititi, I think his name is.
Yeah,
I think I butchered that. And oh my God, it's so funny because he talks to this caricature of Hitler and Hitler's like, I don't know what you're going to do, man. He's like, give me a Heil. Heil. And it's just... It's very, very funny. It's like good dark humor. There's a few sentimental moments, and it gets kind of emotional, you know, near the climax of the movie, of course, dealing with World War II and all that stuff. So it's a great roller coaster ride. It's got a great style, and every character is just really funny, very tongue in cheek. Doesn't take itself too seriously until, you know, the end of it. So I highly recommend it. I think it was nominated for a couple of awards.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it won one too. Cause I think it was at the Oscars. I think it won one. So, it's been getting a lot of praise and the director Wahidi, he's going to do some sort of Star Wars spinoff too. So if he he's got a good track record. So
he does. And just to follow up on that, it won Best Adapted Screenplay.
There you go.
But it was nominated for Supporting Actress, Best Picture, Best Film Editing, Best Costume, Best Production Design. So yeah, it's a pretty good movie. It's been out for a while. I just happened to catch up on it. So
That's what everyone does while you're staying at home is catch up on Netflix and everything else that you can binge watch.
Yeah. So what have you been up to?
Well, we're going to get to it in a little bit, but I've been replaying The Last of Us because Last of Us 2 is coming out.
Right.
Actually, when this gets released, it'll be out. We'll get to that in a little bit. Pretty much hanging around. Yeah, it's still weird.
It's slow going.
It's still weird life here in the coronavirus summer.
Yeah,
I was about to say coronavirus summer of love, but it doesn't sound right.
The coronavirus summer of love. Okay. Yeah.
That doesn't sound right.
Get all that loving in with that social distancing.
Yeah. So, whoops.
Whoops.
Yeah, the CDC won't like that. But, yeah, you know, it is what it is. It's trying to stay as safe as possible during this whole weird, unprecedented time.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, we still have news topics to get to. You know what? Let's hit sports. Let's go. We got a lot of sports to get to. So let's just dive in. Let's just jump right into sports. And as those that have been following the Crispy Noodle know, I am pushing the panic button on Major League Baseball the last couple of weeks, especially after last week. Last week seemed really dire. It seemed like Major League Baseball and the Players Association were just way too far apart in terms of what they wanted from a season in 2020. It's been rough. It's been very rough. But maybe cooler heads may be prevailing here. The commissioner of baseball gave an interview where he said that the whole thing has been a mitigated disaster. So there you go. That's that's a good way to pump some confidence into everybody's feelings. But But it may have sprung three words that maybe turn the tide on this quandary that everybody seems to have, as MLB put out a couple of other posts about it, and then the Players Association retweeted it and simply hashtagged it with, quote, when and where. That was it. That was the message back. And I think it's starting to become, you know, we're starting to get minutes to midnight here. So at some point, both the owners and the Players Association do need to just get down to brass tacks, figure out when and where, and just put together something. And I think maybe the panic is starting to be felt because the Players Association, happening today, came through with a counter proposal to do a 70-game season, to try and put together some sort of semblance of putting together a full season so they can get a full prorated pay, which is their main sticking point. They do not want to reduce any of their players' payroll. They think that's taking advantage of the crisis at hand and everything like that. But they're coming together, and they've thrown this in the commissioner's direction, a 70-game season. Also, with full universal designated hitter rules, which would be interesting for the Phillies as a National League team.
Right.
And to Mike's sadness, a 16-team expanded playoffs.
You give them an inch and they take a mile. Look. All right, I have lots of problems with this.
All right, there you go. I already saw Mike just going crazy.
All right,
so there you go. I explained the situation. Mike, what do you think?
So they roll up and they're like, hey, guys, we want to play literally 40% of the season and get full pay, and also universal designated hitters, and also expand the playoffs. They're asking for so much here. It is absurd.
Well, the owners were going in the complete opposite direction, saying let's only do a 40-game season, and you guys only get like a quarter of the pay, and that was not happening.
Well, you can't give them full pay for 70 games. That's insanity. They're playing 40. I did the math. 43% of the season. You think I can go and tell my bosses, hey, I'm only going to work 2 days next week, but I don't want a full week's worth of pay. I'm not taking PTO. You know, because what universe do they live in? So that annoys me. But then this other thing, universal designated hitters and expanding the playoffs, they accused Major League Baseball of using the pandemic to push, you know, what they wanted. Well, they're also using it to push what they want, to try and expand playoffs to like more than half the league. You know, they're trying to take advantage of the situation to push these initiatives, designated hitter and the expanded playoffs. So they're guilty of the same thing that they're accusing Major League Baseball of being guilty of. I think full pay is way too much. I think 16 teams is also way too much. I understand why they said the 16-team thing, because they're trying to appeal to these owners and franchises that are missing out on selling regular season tickets, regular season concessions. So like, okay, we're going to dramatically increase the playoffs because that gives everybody, you know, it gives at least more than half the league a chance at a quote-unquote longer season and selling playoff tickets and playoff concessions and, you know, even if the teams are terrible. You know, so I can see where they're trying to bait them with that, but I don't like this deal from top to bottom.
Well, I hate to say it, Mike, the full prorated salary thing, the Players Association, they're going to die on that hill. They are not they every single proposal that they have shot back at the commissioner's office have all included full prorated pay. They are not going to give that up. So
wait, when you say prorated,
yeah.
What do you mean by that?
The standard, like you get your salary, any signing bonus that was promised. If you make it into the postseason, you get a sliver of that. That basically the standard stuff.
So they're full salary, because when you say normally when you say prorated, it means like, you know, it's basically not the full salary, but from that point forward.
Yeah.
So is it the full season salary, or is it just from when they start forward?
No, it's the full season.
The full season. Okay. Yeah, that's too much. That's too much.
But they're not going to give it up.
But there's no universe where that makes sense. If I were MLB, I'd call their bluff and be like, all right, no season. You don't get paid anything.
But if you're willing to go all the way to the nuclear option, you're going to hurt baseball's popularity for this year, next year, probably for the decade, for the 20s decade, because at that point, basketball, football, they're going to run away. They're going to be the sports everybody follows.
I don't know. I think baseball is so ingrained. I don't think it's in danger of dying off. I don't think it's in danger of going the way of the dinosaur, like you say. I mean, it might hurt its popularity a little bit, but I mean, honestly, it's like, if you can't keep up with the times, then that's what should happen. You know,
you're just like, fuck it. All right. Well, we lose baseball.
it's survival of the fittest when it comes to sports, you know? And if your sport isn't going to capture audiences like the other ones, then so be it. I don't think this pandemic is going to negatively impact it that much where it like dies off or it becomes like, you know, a not, you know, like soccer in the U.S. where it becomes almost non-existent. I think it's too big. It's too historic. It's too ingrained in the American, you know, subconscious to ever go away.
I think it is in terms of the actual pace of play and everything like that. Baseball, I mean, we talked about it last week on the podcast. Baseball is one of those games that it's great to be in person, but it can be tedious to watch on a TV screen. And now that we're talking about a whole new generation that's raised on YouTube and quick, you know, 1 minute clips, I don't know if baseball is going to make it.
Yeah, but baseball is also one of the most popular peewee sports in the country, you know, and they cater a lot to the young audience. They have so many things for kids at the ballparks. Tickets are relatively cheaper compared to the other sports. It's easy for families to go, you know, so there's still a big market appeal for upcoming generations, you know?
But I don't know. Right now we're living in an era where you can't rely on it. Ever since coronavirus, I feel like you can't make the assumption that you're going to get those big crowds ever again, you know, especially with everything, you know. The CDC is reopening the country, but it's still on like, you know, 20-25% capacity at any sort of big venue. I'm worried. I don't think baseball is going to, if they allow 2020 to go by without a Major League Baseball season, and and that happens, I think it spills into 2021. Also, I forgot to mention this on last week's podcast. 2021, there's also, that's the end of the collective bargaining agreement. They got the Players Association, they got to go back and do this all over again for a new collective bargaining agreement. Like, are you I just feel like this is like a set of dominoes.
Well, that changes things. If I were MLB, I would absolutely use the nuclear option in that case, because then it'll help them with the collective bargaining agreement. They're like, look, we don't care. We can put you all out of business. Come to the table with a good faith proposal and not some ridiculous full pay for 40% of the season proposal. You know, I think if they go nuclear now, it helps them with the collective bargaining agreement in 2021. If they acquiesce all this now, the Players Association is going to have them backed into a corner when it comes time for the collective bargaining agreement.
Okay, so you're basically saying rip the Band-Aid off now, but not in 2021. Yeah, why wait? Well, okay, I can see that.
It's a common bargaining tactic. The Players Association strolls up and they're like, we want, you know, $100 million when really all they want is 50. You know, it's you shoot high and then you negotiate down to the middle, you know? So Major League Baseball has to call their bluff. They're like, no, we're not going to give you full pay for 40% of the season. That's absurd. That is ridiculous. That doesn't work in any universe, in any alternate reality. That's insane. So I say call their bluff, go nuclear. The season's not going to happen, Rich. We're already at almost at the midseason break.
Yeah, like,
there was no preseason. This 70-game season, this is pie-in-the-sky type crap, you know?
Yeah, they would have to get this deal signed like early yesterday. Next week, and then do like 2 weeks of spring training and then ready to go second week of July.
Yeah, but then everybody gets injured because they're all rusty and they haven't been practicing and playing, and they're not up to game speed. It's going to be sloppy. It's going to lessen the product that they're putting out there. Nobody wants this deal. So either the Players Association is trying to sabotage.
Oh, the Players Association wants this deal.
they want it, but they know they're not going to get it. So one of these parties is trying to sabotage it because they're ready to go in guns blazing for the collective bargaining agreement. We're going to see who has more clout here, the Players Association or the league, because I think this is too big of an ask from the Players Association. And I think baseball knows that. And so it's who has the strongest will now, because it seems to me, like, if you're a player, do you want to jump back in mid-July, rusty as hell, risk injuring yourself and not being able to play 2021? You know what I mean? Like, there's a reason why there's training camps and and preseasons and all that stuff. It just seems like at this point, it's so late. They're in this standoff, and it's like they're both offering up ridiculous terms in the hopes that the other one acquiesces, but they both secretly know that the other probably won't.
So would you guess that there's not going to be baseball then? Because it sounds to me like you're planning for the end, that this isn't going to happen.
We're 3 weeks into June. The mid-season break is what, July?
Yeah, July 4th.
And they missed all of whatever you call it, training camp, preseason in baseball. What is it called?
Spring training.
Spring training. There you go, stupid.
Mike is not a baseball guy.
No. So you figure they have to have at least a couple of weeks. They have to have a couple of weeks of summer training, right?
Yeah,
so
they're not training.
They're not going to get back into baseball. They signed the deal. And firstly, these facilities aren't even open. There's logistical things they have to iron out.
So
by the time you figure out logistics, by the time you get these massive venues up and running, bring all your staff back, get everything, you know, like there's things that you have to coordinate with concessions and tickets and how do you deal with season ticket holders. So by the time you get that machine rolling, by the time you get people back to facilities, by the time you get training, it's going to be mid-July. We're not going to see actual baseball if they sign this deal next week, probably until the end of July, the beginning of August. The season's over. What 70 games are they playing between August and September?
Yeah.
There's like physically not enough time. Like,
yeah.
They're breaking the laws of time and physics.
Well, you're also forgetting baseball can do double headers.
Oh, so what? They're going to just have baseball 24/7?
Just straight? Massive.
Just constant.
Yeah, and every baseball fanatic won't go to work for the next, like, 2 months. Just like, oh, I gotta watch every single game.
I'm just saying, they're ridiculous deals from both sides. It's way too late. They both know that's ridiculous deals. They're saving all their guns for the collective bargaining agreement in 2021. I didn't realize that was on the table. They're trying to find out who has more pull going into these agreements. That is the real goal. The goal isn't the 2020 season. The goal is to have more bargaining power next year.
Fair enough. Also, speaking of all the player safety stuff, yeah, that's another thing baseball hasn't even really even begun to tackle. Which
they don't have a plan.
Yeah.
They have no plan.
I mean, literally, basketball and hockey are so far ahead of Major League Baseball, it's embarrassing.
But look at how long they've been working on it.
Yep.
That's how much time baseball is going to need. Basketball and hockey have been talking about it for like a month now.
Yeah.
So unless baseball magically whips a plan out of their ass and enacts it in like literally a week, I think the season's done, man.
Well,
it's going to be super sloppy and really bad and like comically terrible.
Look, that's at least a season. I think
that does more damage than not having it.
I think
because if you don't have it, you can hype up the return. But if you have it and it's bad, everyone's like, "Well, that was terrible."
But everything it can be forgiven, I think, in 2020 because of the coronavirus. At least you gave it a shot. If you don't give it a shot and you don't have any baseball in 2020, it's not going to be good. The casual sports fan is going to lose interest in baseball, I think.
Like me.
Right. Okay.
You know what I'll never lose interest in, though?
Yeah.
Another football, Rich.
Yes, another sports topic. It happens to deal with football. So Mike is happy again, but he might turn angry at the news development that I have here on Twitter. A certain radio station, I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Put out a list of who they consider to be the greatest of all time athletes in Philadelphia sports history, because right now there's no sports happening. So that's what a sports radio station is going to do. And they've been doing their release of this list step by step. And today there was massive Twitter arguments between Philadelphians that were friends, family, kinsmen, and now we are divided in twain. Because this list came out and it put Eagles franchise quarterback of the 2000s, Donovan McNabb, as number 11 overall as this list of the greatest of all time Philadelphia sports athletes. And then at number 9, Nick Foles, BDN, Nick Foles at number 9. And people are having massive debates over this in the Twitter sphere, on the streets. There might even be a riot by the end of the show over it. So, Mike, I know that you were a big fan of McNabb. How does this sit with you that they put Nick Foles at number 9 and McNabb at number 11?
This is really tough. Yeah. Because I understand the argument. Nick Foles won the Eagles their one and only Super Bowl. I get that. As a huge Eagles fan, that is not lost on me. What I think is lost on a lot of people, though, is that removing the Super Bowl from the equation, Nick Foles is a pedestrian quarterback. He had a couple of flashes, of course. What he did was incredible. But I don't think anybody can sit there and say that they would take Nick Foles over Donovan McNabb when you look at their whole careers. Because we had Nick Foles as a starter for a time. And I remember the conversations. Because guess what? I was a Nick Foles supporter back when he was a starter. I said he's not getting the help that he needs. They're not calling the right plays, this and that. I remember defending against mutual friends of ours. And they're like, oh, he holds the ball too long. He's terrible. He gets sacked too much. And then he wins the Super Bowl. All of a sudden, he's the best thing ever. And I'm like, where were you fools, like, you know, 8 years ago? Right? Mm-hmm. So people have short-term memories, right? They, you know, Nick Foles won the Super Bowl, ergo he's the best quarterback the Eagles have ever had. False. Donovan McNabb is still the best quarterback the Eagles have ever had purely because of his numbers and what he did for the amount of time that he did it here in Philadelphia. No quarterback has been better. It's just, I think it's indisputable. The numbers and the time that he spent here and what he was able to do with a team that was, you think we have bad wide receivers now, bad offense now? I mean, we forget James Thrash and Todd Pinkston and Freddie Mitchell. These were the weapons McNabb was working with, that, and he took us to four consecutive NFC Championship games as basically the only player on offense. Okay? So I think perspective and context matters here. So I think Nick Foles is a little too high on that list. Either that or McNabb should be, maybe Nick Foles is placed accurately, but McNabb should be at least in the top 10. I think putting him at 11, that's just like a little dig. Like, you're not even top 10, because this city has always hated McNabb. Always.
Oh,
always.
Yeah. Yep.
So go ahead, Rich. Say your piece, because okay. I feel you might go in the opposite direction.
Okay, first off, you take back Freddie Mitchell, all right? Fred X is the man, all right? I will defend Fred X and forth at 28 as much as I can.
That dude was a bum, as my
uncle would say. Fred X.
He's a bum.
I want to thank my hands.
I want to thank my hands. Oh, my God. What a press conference.
Yeah. So always remember Fred X. All right. So here's the bottom line. Here's what the it really comes down to. Would you rather have continued sustained success in that like conservative kind of mold?
Right.
Or would you be the kind of person to risk it all, risk it for the biscuit, and go for the guts? I think this is what it is like the essence of the debate here.
Right.
As someone who loves gambling,
oh my God,
I think Nick Foles gets the edge. Not only was he thrust into this situation as the backup quarterback, by the way, which is like a movie storyline. That seems like something that shouldn't even happen in a movie. You know, like if we heard the story of Nick Foles in a movie, we'd probably be like, oh, that would never happen in a million years. You know,
yeah.
But this actually happened. He had to take over Carson Wentz, who is injured on an MVP season, who is, you know, the bar was already set here, and Nick Foles had to find a way to not just match it, but then continue it into playoff territory, which, as we know, playoff football is, you know, that's
right.
So difficult to make it through. I mean, we've seen throughout the years great quarterbacks that we always say, oh, he should have won a title, but guess what? It sometimes it just doesn't come together in the playoffs. Yet Nick Foles was able to put together arguably one of the most impeccable runs in the postseason and lead this team to just a crazy Super Bowl win in 2017. And it's first off, it's such a great story. Nick Foles is, you know, he had the heart of a champion to get it that far. And I hate to say it, he delivered. There's something has to be said about performing on the grandest stage of them all. Let me bring it to wrestling. Would you rather have Goldberg being undefeated in 150 matches or whatever, and, you know, while that was fun and all, he kind of died out when it eventually ended? Or would you rather be The Undertaker, who went 22-0 at WrestleMania? The stakes of the stage matter just as much as the career retrospective. So I'm going to go with, I like the ranking. I think Nick Foles should be ahead of Don McNabb. He delivered the city the big championship that it always wanted.
I feel like Don McNabb just always gets so disrespected. I mean, he is a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback without a title. And I think that he should be, because his statistically and in terms of wins, he's there among some of the best that ever played the game.
I will concede that point. There are some people that love to hate McNabb,
yeah,
and love to just bury him in the history of the Eagles. To a degree, I can understand that, because sometimes it was frustrating to watch McNabb. There were some plays.
It was.
I always vividly remember he had, I think it was Pinkston. I remember there was a play in one of the NFC Championship games. He had Pinkston wide open, and he threw it to his feet. And I was just like, oh, come on. You got to make those throws with the NFC Championship games.
I've had friends say that he was killing gophers. I mean, he did. Yes. He did sometimes drill it into the ground. But, I mean, even still, he still put up the numbers. He still won us the games. I guess my hang-up is, what are we using as a metric here? Like, what is when they say the greatest athlete of all time, like, are we talking about what that player means to the city? Or are they talking about, you know, like, because in what they mean to the city, there's a statue of Nick Foles.
Yeah.
So, I mean, clearly I'm not winning that debate. Nick Foles matters more. He matters more because he gave me as an Eagles fan my probably one and only Super Bowl win that I'm ever going to see in my lifetime. So he clearly matters more. But if we're talking about who was the better player, without a doubt, McNabb was. So how are we measuring this? When they say great, what does greatest mean?
Yeah, I that's part of the problem too, is that they're just kind of labeling this as the greatest of all time on Broad Street for Philadelphia sports history.
Right.
So I think maybe you have to combine that with a Philadelphia-centric view of these players.
Okay.
By the way, fun fact, number 10 was Bernie Parent. So I don't know if that helps you out with, he was the goalie for the Flyers when they won the Stanley Cup.
Who were I want to know, I can't find the list. Who were the other top 10?
I forget what the rest of them, because they're doing them like one each day.
Oh, that's annoying. I guess they're desperate for content just like we are.
Stretch it out. Yeah. So I don't know who's from then on, but today was Nick Foles, and that caused this controversy that McNabb was ranked lower than Foles. I see it. I totally see it. Nick Foles, man, he delivered.
I mean, I'm torn. I am, because I feel like McNabb unfairly gets written off. He's like a footnote in Philadelphia sports history. I mean, when you look at like Eagles passing leaders, when you look at Eagles quarterbacks all time, McNabb is like top of the list in most of those categories.
Yeah.
The Eagles have been around for almost 100 years at this point. They're what are they like? They're like 87 years, the franchise. In 87 years, he leads the pack in passing statistics.
Yeah, I won't. You know? That's a point I will concede to you, that there are a lot of fans that would love to not remember Donovan McNabb, which is a shame, because he was a franchise quarterback. He led the Eagles to several successes, but unfortunately, he never could punch through, and that is, unfortunately, what a lot of people choose to focus on.
I also,
and that is unfair. I will give
it
you
is,
that.
It is unfair. I will say this, that another part of this conversation is also, I think just in football in general, we unfairly place a lot of the team's success on the quarterback. I mean, how much of McNabb's failure to get it to the end was due to him or due to coaching and the players around him? And how much was Nick Foles' success due to coaching and the players around him and just a year of fate and destiny? You know what I mean? Because we saw Nick Foles in a lot of other big games not be able to get it done. And, you know, we saw McNabb, same thing, get it done consistently and then in the final moments not be able to get it done. So, I mean, part of it's – the quarterback's only one part of the puzzle, you know?
It is, but it's the most important part of the puzzle.
Is it though? Because we've had teams win Super Bowls with terrible quarterbacks.
Not lately.
No, not lately, because the league is shifting more to a passing league. I will give you that.
Yeah.
I will say this, that I think in terms of sentimental value and emotion and what the player means for the legacy of Philadelphia sports. I think Nick Foles does win in that regard in terms of who's better. It all comes down on how you define greatest, right. You know, because McNabb, after he left the Eagles, he was like over and done with the city. And it's always annoyed me that he's always opens his mouth and starts complaining about our players and our teams and like nonsense, like just all the time. He has a very like sour taste of the city left over from when he was here. Rightfully so, probably. I mean, we treated them terribly, you know? So, but it's always just like Nick Foles would probably never do that.
Yeah, I would hope.
So I could see Nick Foles being viewed more favorably as history continues to progress.
Yeah. All right, we got to wrap that up and head to the entertainment realm. We got some entertainment news to talk about. It's also a big week, not just for random lists that go viral on Twitter, but in the video game realm, it is a huge week for Sony fans. Because The Last of Us 2 drops today, actually, when this podcast comes out.
Maybe you're listening to it in the car as you're driving to pick up your copy.
Yeah.
If you still pre-order it at physical locations like I do, like a weirdo.
Yeah. Mike, yeah, you're the only person that does that.
I got the physical special edition. You know, you got to get the weird statues and comics or whatever it comes with. I don't even know.
Okay.
But anyway.
What are you expecting out of the second entry into Naughty Dog's Last of Us? Now franchise, they're turning it into a franchise essentially.
It is a franchise. I'm expecting great things. I'm not reading reviews. I'm trying to stay away from too much media and press about The Last of Us 2 because I'm worried about spoilers and leaks and stuff like that. But I just looking at the scores. It's like mid to high 90s out of, hundreds of reviews. Some people are throwing around the term masterpiece. It's Naughty Dog has a knack for putting out these what people call generation defining games. You know, at the end of the PlayStation 3 generation, they dropped the first Last of Us. And everyone's like, this is the pinnacle of gaming in this moment. And now 7 years later, as the PlayStation 4 is getting ready to pass the torch to PlayStation 5, they drop The Last of Us 2. And again, same conversation. This is the pinnacle of gaming at this point. The few reviews that I have listened to talked about how almost every aspect of the game is better than the previous one. The fluidity of movement, the combat is more nuanced, the story punches harder. I don't know how it could possibly, given what happens in the first game. Apparently, from what I understand, it gets very uncomfortable at times. Naughty Dog pulls even fewer punches than they did before. And what I really appreciate with them is that they don't shy away from difficult topics, and they tell the story that they want to tell. This one review that I listened to on a podcast mentioned how there were moments where you want to be able to do A, but the character, obviously goes in a different direction because it's that character's story. And Naughty Dog is telling you a specific story that they have a vision for. It's not like these games where you could just go anywhere and do anything. You know, it's not a choose your own adventure style game, which is all the rage nowadays. They are telling a very specific beginning, middle, and end type story. And I think that's actually a pretty bold move in today's gaming world where choice is like the big buzzword. You know, every game wants to give players choice, multiple endings and good, bad spectrums and open world. And Naughty Dog's like, nope, you're going to play our story the way that we want it to be played. And it's basically like an interactive book movie.
Yeah. I've
always appreciated them for that.
I love all the choose your own story kind of games. And while I would say I would personally enjoy those games more than I do a linear story, in the context of a more mature game like The Last of Us, it works more effectively as a linear story, because in essence, especially something for like The Last of Us, where you're dealing with a post apocalyptic world, there literally can't be more choices, you know. Right. it wouldn't fit the story.
I also think it makes it a stronger narrative.
Yeah,
I mean, let's think of it this way. We both replayed the first one recently, or I finished it. Did you finish replaying the first one?
I'm going to finish it tomorrow.
Ah, nice. Perfect timing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we both know how it goes. For those of you that don't know and you don't want to be spoiled, I don't know why you haven't played it in the past 7 years.
But yeah, you had 7 years to play it.
7 years, but in the off chance you're the one person, you can skip ahead a little bit. But in terms of narrative, if the first one had been a choose your own adventure, because I remember distinctly the end of it, you know, you're coming up to the ultimate moment of you have to save Ellie from the operating room.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of games it would have been like push X to, you know, kill all the doctors and save Ellie, or push circle to let her sacrifice herself for the cure or whatever. You know, I feel like that would have just sucked all the emotion and the weight out of those characters in that moment if they had given you the option, because that's not Joel's story. Joel's story is he's desperately trying to replace what he lost.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the game. You know? And it's supposed to make you feel uncomfortable. That's the point of that game, is at the end you're like, are we the baddies? You know, that meme? Because yeah. Yes, surprise, you are, in a way. You know, and it offers those interesting moral and ethical dilemmas. But if it gives you that choice, it's just like, it just sucks it all out, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know. How do you feel?
By the way, since we're in spoiler territory, I got to just say again, the first 5 minutes of The Last of Us, wow. I've always respected The Last of Us. Those first 5 minutes, just right off the bat, you know, letting you know the stakes are grave in this world.
Many entertainment properties would do that.
Yeah, right off the bat. So even replaying it, it still had like the same effect. Yeah. Like I knew it was coming, but still it was just like, whoa. So
yeah,
I was Naughty Dog, man. They have balls. They don't care. Yeah. Yeah. So you got to give them props on that. My personal goal is I'm going to finish the first one by the end of Friday. And then I should time it perfectly that I can play it. Play the second one over the weekend.
So playing the game a second time, that's a big mark, because I don't play many games over again. It's like Mass Effect, BioShock, and The Last of Us now are games that I've like replayed, and Portal 2, just because Portal's awesome. Mm-hmm. But for you, I know for me, it held up just as well. And I know I played it for my girlfriend, and that was like the one game where she was like, she would ask, do you want to play The Last of Us so I can watch it? And I'm like, you don't even have to ask. Let's go. You know? Be still my heart. Yeah. You know, so it pulls in non-gamers. That's how good the story is that she's invested in the story. She wants to know where the characters are going.
Look at HBO. They're going to try and make a Last of Us series.
Right. So did you find that the game, I mean, I know you said the opening still impacted you, but did you find that it still stood up to the test of time 7 years later? Does it still?
Yeah. The gameplay, the story, even like the art of the broken down world is fascinating.
Yeah. You don't really see post-apocalyptic worlds that vibrant.
Yeah. I also forgot the one level where you have to get to a bridge and you have to go through like a building that's crooked. Remember that?
Yeah.
That was really cool, because like everything is slanted a little bit as you're trying to make your way through this building. So yeah, it's like little things like that. You're just like, oh, that's an interesting little take on it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, all in all, just, yeah, I'm happy even on a second playthrough 7 years later, and I'm anxious to get my hands on Last of Us 2 when that comes out this weekend. So
it's gonna be good. Go get your copies, guys.
Yep. All right, and one more entertainment news story that we gotta get to real quickly. Because even though we were talking about how baseball might not come back, apparently movie theaters are anxious to come back.
Yeah, so this broke just before we started recording. AMC, the theater chain, announced that it's going to reopen theaters in mid-July. I think that's an interesting move. They are going to be enacting social distancing and limited capacities in order to try and prevent the spread of coronavirus. And they're also encouraging contactless payment for concessions and tickets. They won't, however, require masks. They will be selling them in theaters, though, which I think was interesting. Like, oh, no, you don't got to wear them. But if you want them, we're selling them.
Yeah.
I can just imagine now, like, branded masks. You know, get your Marvel Avengers mask with a large popcorn for $30 or something.
Oh, crazy Mike, no, it's going to get worse than that. Get your limited edition bicentennial anniversary of Wizard of Oz mask for $89.99.
Well, you know, you're probably not far off. They are going to have lots of special editions and limited editions. Yeah. It's going to be nonsense. But I have a couple of concerns here with this announcement. One, what movies are they going to show? Everything's been delayed out of the summer 2020.
You know what
There's
I heard?
No movies. What?
Well, now a movie that is still on track to come out as scheduled is Christopher Nolan's Tenet.
Oh,
well, yeah.
Get ready for that movie to make like $4 billion because it's the only movie people can see. People are just going to go see the same movie over and over again. But I also
and it's Christopher Nolan. It's got to be good.
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely going to be good. But and man, it's going to really tempt me to go to theaters again.
Yeah.
Movie. But here's my other concern is, I mean, clearly we're in the middle of a pandemic and it's a virus. Viruses don't go away unless they're cured or there's a vaccine. Like the flu comes back every year. So how are they going to mitigate the spread of this in a theater where people are spilling drinks and eating food and stuff's getting tossed around and there's kids running up and down the aisles and everybody's packed into these seats very close to each other and, you know, sharing a lot of surfaces. It's just, have you ever seen the bathrooms in a movie theater? They're not exactly the cleanest of public venues, theaters in general.
Right.
So
The answer is they're not going to do anything. They just want people to buy tickets and come to their theater because they haven't run a single movie in the last 4 months.
Yeah.
Get your ass back into movie theater now, all of you.
All of you. Yeah. They're like, come on.
Yeah. So yeah, they're not.
How do you feel about all that? Does it give you pause?
It doesn't sound like a good idea to me. But no. I'm sure they're going to do like limited capacity, something like that. But still, I don't know. I want to take my chances going into a crowded movie theater.
Yeah. So the limited capacity might work because everybody buys tickets in advance now. And, you know, you pick your seats for most of them. So, I mean, that might work. But some of the older theaters that don't have this type of, you know, online ticket sales and they have, you know, because they're still around. There's like old theaters with the real close seats and they're, you know, they're not like the big pushy recliners. It's, I don't know. It just worries me.
Like so the one in Ambler?
Like the one in Ambler. Exactly. The one in Ambler. Yes. They're theaters. And it's nice. It's like an old timey theater, but it's like the screen rooms are about like the size of like my living room.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you're trying to pack like 20 people, 25 people in there, and just it makes me.
the Christmas music went off again. It's, my sister's letting us know we're going too long.
I love your phone.
Without fail, it always happens. There you go, the Christmas music indicating that we're going too long.
That's how you know we're authentic on this show.
Yes. The Christmas music randomly plays.
Yeah. But to sum up, AMC is trying to reopen theaters in mid-July. I have cause for concern. I would probably be a little bit hesitant to go to theaters, you know, just because big closed venues with lots of people, lots of food, you know, just makes me a little nervous.
Yeah. I would have reservations as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird, but you know what's even weirder is this next segment.
Yep, it's time for some odd news. And as always, I have the odd news nugget of the week that we need to get to, because my sister has informed us that we're going over time already. So
yeah,
I'll try and make this short but sweet, because this is a short but sweet story.
Oh,
what a tease.
What a tease. Is it from Florida?
No, Nebraska.
Nebraska? What's in Nebraska? Nothing.
That's weird. I don't think we've ever had an odd news story in Nebraska.
Because I don't think there's anything in Nebraska. Name one thing in Nebraska other than the story.
This dude. We got this dude.
Okay, so what happened in Nebraska?
Okay, well, first off, before I get into the story, Mike, do you know about drink White Claw?
Yeah, Claw is Law. It's a hard seltzer that everybody likes.
What's the saying?
Claw is Law or something like that?
No. I mean,
my girlfriend says it. What?
Your girlfriend is going to be very upset. No. Ain't no laws when drinking Claws.
I haven't heard that one.
That's the popular phrase.
They're not good. Unpopular opinion. I don't like them at all.
I agree. I don't like seltzer.
They're terrible. I don't like them.
If it wasn't, my problem is the seltzer thing. It doesn't, that's not what I want to feel when I'm drinking.
Yeah, it's like weird.
It's
like
weird.
You go to take a sip and it's like, is this water? Is this alcohol? Is this soda? I don't know what's happening in my mouth and I don't like it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there, buddy.
Okay, good. Yeah. It's a guy. It must be a guy thing.
Yeah, 10-4, good buddy.
We're a good buddy, and apparently we're truckers too.
We're in Nebraska, so I mean,
the only things in Nebraska are this guy and truckers, and apparently White Claw.
Yeah, that's
so
it.
Go ahead. Let's so what's going on with this guy?
Yeah, so the popular phrase is ain't no laws when drinking Claws, but unfortunately there are when it comes to cops.
Uh-oh.
In an attempt to avoid arrest, a Nebraska suspect ran away from cops, then pulled out of his bag several White Claws and tried to pelt them at cops as he tried to flee. Like, that was his, like,
oh my God.
Take this!
I mean, that's wrong on a lot of different levels. One, you're assaulting police officers. Two, you're wasting alcohol.
Yeah.
Wait, were these were full cans, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, what a waste. I mean, I don't like it, but it's still a waste.
Yeah. According to police, 36-year-old Matthew Stinson had threatened on Sunday afternoon that he was going to kill people in the lobby of a luxury inn in Lincoln, Nebraska. Boy, that's a rough Sunday afternoon. Is it like the checkout time bothering you? Like, that's a weird time to get really upset, isn't it?
What time was it again?
Sunday afternoon.
So, like, what time in the afternoon? Like, early afternoon, late afternoon? He just decided this is the killing hour?
I am pissed off.
I'm pissed off.
And I need to kill multiple people.
You know what it was? It's the Sunday blues.
You know what? He realized Monday was coming up.
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
It was like 5 o'clock on a Sunday, and he was like getting down. And he's like, I'm going to go kill some people.
So he allegedly threatened to start with the clerk. That's not good. That's
so
not
mean.
Good. Why are you threatening to kill people and then having like a list of like, okay, I'm going to start here and then I'm going to move over here and then I'm going to like, you don't want to detail your strategy.
I don't know how I would feel about that. If I were like down far on the list, I'd be like, oh, right. I can survive. Also, does he value me that little to put me all the way down to the bottom of the list? Like,
yeah. Also, how are you doing? Yeah. Are you doing the list based on importance or like which victim is closest to you or which one's more convenient?
Did he have an actual list? Like he pulls out a piece of paper. He's like, all right, let's see. One, clerk. Two, bellhop. Like,
I don't think he had a list. I don't see any. I don't see any notification of a list. But he does say multiple people. Like he's going from like the clerk to this person to that person.
So he said this out loud.
Yeah.
So he had a list in his head at least.
Yeah.
So he's got thinking about this.
He's got he's got a mental list.
Okay.
So by the time he got ready to depart the hotel, that's when Lincoln Police Department officers arrived.
So wait, he said he was going to kill people and then he's just decided to leave?
No. He made his threat, then went back to his room to get ready to leave. Because, you know, I don't want to leave anything behind.
Checking out is very stressful, okay?
Yes.
You don't want to leave anything behind, you know?
All right. This checkout time is too damn early. Now I got to go. I'm going to kill everybody here. But before I do that, I got to make sure I don't leave anything behind in my room, especially the white claws.
I'm going to do one final sweep of the room before I start my murdering.
Right. All right. Where are those white claws?
Right.
So this gave him enough time. Lincoln Police Department officers showed up to arrest him. So that's, I guess I'm glad he's so meticulous in him leaving so that he never started this. So that's good.
Oh my God.
That's when he became agitated and took off running away from the cops. He went into his bag and started throwing the spiked sparkling water. just tossing him back as he's running away. Finally, though, Stinson was then apprehended after a foot chase.
And
on his person, he was carrying a small pocket knife. So take that as you will. I don't know.
I guess he was armed.
Yeah.
Armed and dangerous.
Right. He was charged with use of a deadly weapon, resisting arrest, and making threats.
Was the deadly weapon the white claw? Well, no, because he didn't use the knife.
But I think he still threatened, because he said, "I'm going to kill multiple people."
But the charge was use of a deadly weapon.
I don't know. Are they talking about the white claw? You think the white claw is a deadly weapon?
I don't know. It all depends on what they mean by use of a deadly weapon.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. I'm gonna try and look it up. Deadly. I can't find.
Use of a deadly weapon, resisting arrest, and making threats. So I don't know. Maybe you're right, because maybe the threat. Maybe I guess saying he's gonna kill multiple people goes under making threats. He resisted arrest when he took off running.
Okay, and this is California Law Group, Penal Code. I mean, this is California.
Well, that's no good. This is Nebraska.
Look, I'm making do with what I got here. Assault with a deadly weapon. Any person who commits an assault upon the person of another with a deadly weapon or instrument other than a firearm shall be punished by imprisonment. Okay, so it's just, all right, examples. Trying to stab someone, throwing a hammer, telling a pit bull to attack a person. All right, so the possible defenses are the object was not a lethal weapon, the actions were not willful, and or the person acted in lawful self-defense. So again, this is like some California weird like law group website. But I guess what I'm saying is that he wasn't using the knife. It was in his pocket, right?
Yeah, he was using
the white claws. So I guess the white claw, like they gave an example of a hammer, right? Like a blunt force object.
Yeah.
Right? So a full can. I mean, if you've ever felt a full can, like, you know, you could really do some damage with that.
Okay,
so White Claw is a deadly weapon.
There you go.
Another reason not to drink it.
Yes.
It's deadly. It's literally deadly. There you go.
I like that.
Fact. Science.
Stinson is being held in the county jail in lieu of a $20,000 bond. So I don't think he'll be getting out anytime soon.
So my campaign against White Claw here. One, it tastes terrible. Two, it's a deadly weapon. Three, it's so bad that this dude was willingly throwing it away to try to escape. Okay,
That's
three strikes. You're out, White Claw. You're out.
I love the fact now you're using baseball references.
I bring it full circle.
Yeah,
full
circle. Very good.
I'm rounding the bases.
Yeah, there you go. Good job, Mike. Mike, the true MVP of this podcast this week. So before my sister calls again and starts the Christmas music up, what are your apocalypse activities that you're looking forward to, in the next week that you'd like to recommend others?
So apocalypse activities, I'm always recommending playing games and keeping your mind active with some interactive entertainment. Right now you can get some great games and support a good cause by checking out Humble Bundle. Are you familiar with the Humble Bundle website?
Yep.
It's a basically a video game storefront where their gimmick is every game that you buy, a portion of it goes to charities that you can choose. And sometimes they put together bundles with developers. They sell a bunch of games in support of specific charities. Well, this weekend they're doing the Humble Fight for Racial Justice bundle, where all the proceeds are going to three charities, the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, Race Forward, and the Bail Project. For $30, you get $1,200 worth of games, ebooks, comics, and soundtracks. I pulled the numbers. There's 50 games and 24 books/comics. Some of the highlights are the Jackbox Party Pack 4, BioShock Remastered, Kerbal Space Program, a couple of the latest sports games like NBA 2K20, and you also get Attack on Titan manga anthology if you like manga. So far, they've raised over $2.3 million. I just bought the bundle, so I'm excited to go try out some city-building games like Surviving Mars, which is made by the same people that did City Skylines. It's basically City Skylines on Mars.
There you
so
go.
I'm eager to try that. So yeah, it seems like a great bundle. Like I said, over $1,200 worth of games, ebooks, and comics. And it all goes to a really good cause. So if you are not playing The Last of Us Part 2 and you want to get some good old-fashioned PC gaming in, go get this bundle and you'll be set for like the next, well, for the rest of the pandemic, basically. This is like 50 games.
Yeah, if there's a second or third wave, there you go. You're really going to have a lot of content to hold you over for that amount of time.
Yeah, and it all goes for a good cause too. So that's what I'm going to be doing, probably.
There you go. Well, I'm gonna take the lame way out. It's Last of Us weekend, so yeah. I'm gonna be playing that, and yeah, I can't wait to see where the story goes and experience it. And I'm sure we'll probably do a dedicated episode to just The Last of Us whenever we both finish it.
Yeah, whenever we both finish it. Apparently, it's a bigger game, so it might take us a while.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was 7 years in the making, so
yeah.
So,
I can't wait. Good stuff. Yeah.
All right, so without further ado, I think it's time to wrap up this episode of the Crispy Compact Communique, a abridged version of the Crispy Noodle Podcast. If you like what you heard, make sure you go to our website, thecrispynoodle.com. Make sure you like us on Facebook, The Crispy Noodle. You like us on Twitter, at The Crispy Noodle, and on Instagram, at The Crispy Noodle Podcast.
That's right. You can also subscribe to our channel on YouTube. But most importantly, remember to subscribe to the Crispy Noodle Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Get the latest episodes downloaded for free every week. If you're not watching the videos, the audio from this podcast will be on those services. So make sure you do that.
Yep. You can take us on the go with Spotify or the podcast app of your choice when you're getting back to work and driving around. So that's always a neat little tidbit. And if you want to follow us individually, on Twitter, I am at Rich Liebig, RichLaeBig.
I'm at Mikey Costanzo, MikeyCostanzo. You can get in touch with us individually on Twitter. Send us whatever sports, entertainment, or odd news stories that you want us to cover. Send us questions. I mean, anything. We'll cover whatever.
Yeah. Let us know if you have any pressing questions or any sort of advice you want us to give here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast. Let us know. We'll tackle that. But for right now, I'm done my Hugh Garden. Yeah, I went fancy today. So I'm done my Belgian beer of choice. So it's time to wrap it up. This has been the Crispy Compact Communique, an abridged version of the Crispy Noodle Podcast. Let us be the Crispy Noodle in your vegetarian salad of life and boring news. That will do it. We'll see you guys next week.
See you guys.
Later. Bye-bye.
Some of us have great stories, pretty stories that take place at lakes with boats and friends and noodle salad. A lot of people, that's their story. Good times, noodle salad.
I'm Barbara Waters, and this has been the Crispy Noodle 2020.